Lots of technology. Ever since our kids left home, Penny and I have always had, we can't change a channel on a television, and we've had the Weather Channel on for nearly 10 years. If you'd like a weather report, Ron Bowles called a couple of months ago, wanted to know if I'd be on the program. I said, oh, that'd be cool. I think the last time I was on BIF program was maybe 83 or something like that. It seems like a long time, and probably some of you, not long enough. But I then find out that, well, it's going to be a panel a month later. And then I get here, and I find out it's going to be 5 minutes. So I've got 23 years of windshield time and all this knowledge oozing out of my head, and I can't even think where to start. He didn't even give me time to tell a joke, which is, oh, you'd like to hear a joke? Well, there was a fellow that checked in a hotel in Arkansas, a little redneck guy, and he calls down the front desk and he says, hey, he says, I got a leak in my sink. Well, she says, if you got to, go right ahead. I would seriously like to congratulate the past, present, and current members of BIF for 40 years of achievement. And I think that includes all of us here. And along with that, I'd just like to pose the question, where would we have been without BIF? Have we all considered that? I mean, we got all the other factions. We got Showring, and we got all these other fragmented parts of the industry based on subjectivity. And yet here's BIF that's, we put objective measurements together and breeding values and all these things. And even more important than that, we share them at an annual meeting, not only in this forum, but in the coffee area. It's probably one of the most valuable areas of the meeting. And not only that, but we make friends and we develop relationships and we make contacts and networks. And where would we have been without all this for 40 years? It's really a good question, I think. I don't know how you pose that on your computer, but we wouldn't be where we are today. We know that. And we wouldn't have the motivation for grad students to go back and make studies and make experiments and designs. We wouldn't have the confirmation or the confrontation that causes advancements that was mentioned through the years, some of the arguments and discussions and debates that led to breakthroughs in technology and animal breeding and methodology. So I think congratulations to all of you here and congratulations to all the people that that are not here. I think the question is interesting, and when you really get into it, it gets a lot deeper than you think. The question that was proposed to the panel, which was, does the seed stock industry focus on the needs of the commercial cow-calf producer? And is it needs or wants? Back when my dad grew up and when I was growing up, we wanted a television. Now everyone needs a television. So I think not only that is it needs or wants, but who is this commercial cow-calf producer? I've been told that 50% or more are in the business for some other reason other than net profit. So are we supplying all these needs? I've had the opportunity to be on helicopter musters in Australia. The need there was an animal that musters readily. He can't be too tame and he can't be too wild. I have the opportunity to judge several longhorn shows through the years. The criteria there is coat color. Do you want to put the hide on your floor and how long the horns are to mount on your wall? These are different needs and different wants. And lo and behold, we have a seed stock breeder out there somewhere that's supplying all these things. And I got a neighbor that raises show steer, and he's got a need for this post-legged animal that can barely walk, and somebody's supplying that. So we do have needs and want, but it is, for the sake of us, I think we're looking at mainstream USA genetics cow-calf producers that are in it for a profit, and that is a minority. That is a minority, but it is, I think, what we naturally focus on when we come to these meetings. I think the seed stock industry and that group of people have historically given them what they've wanted and what they've needed in excess. If they wanted them tall or if they wanted them thick, we got them really tall and then we got them really thick and then we got them really small and we got them fat and we got them lean and we did it in excess. A lot of our efforts are what I would call corrective genetics. We correct the mistakes that went through a cycle 20 years ago, and we'll probably correct other mistakes as we go along. I also call it defensive genetics. genetics that keep us out of trouble. There was an old fellow that I knew years ago, Pete Marble. I don't know if anyone in here had known of him, but he owned ranches in Nevada and California. He was a Stanford graduate, got an MBA at Harvard, very astute, very active in NCBA, and he used to buy Hereford bulls from Radakovich. And he says, "Steve, I'll tell you, I don't want to deflate your ego, but," he says, "the genetics that you supply me on my ranch are not a major, major part of my profitability, as long as they don't cause a wreck." He says, "I got to deal with bankers, I got to deal with employees, I got to deal with BLM, Forest Service." He says, "Just don't cause me a wreck genetically, and that's all I ask," which is defensive, I think what you call defensive genetics. I think we should be congratulated that we're producing a product with more accuracy. And that comes strictly through this association, through BIFs, through EPDs and all the associated measurements and objective measurements that we can provide a commercial cow-calf producer. I think we can really take our hats off and say this is what we're doing. Recently, I've actually found people in the industry that like to bash EPDs, and they say, "Well, they've led us down the wrong road. We've made cattle too big, or we've made cattle too small." EPDs are a tool in the toolbox. They're comparable to a carpenter who now has a laser to measure and balance things instead of a plumb line and a level. What you measure, and this laser piece of equipment doesn't build the wrong house. The architect builds the wrong house. So I think this should be understood, and I think in this industry there needs to be some rebuttals about people that go around and say, "Well, these EPDs, they made cattle too big, and they made, you know, and look where we've gone," and all these things. It is only a tool. It's a methodology. Direction is in the hands of the architect or the fellow that's using it. So congratulations on that. I had the opportunity, and I don't know how I'm doing on time, but I can rattle on, because it's been 23 years. I was at a dinner. I got a good friend at home that's a lead attorney. Dan Jacoby is the lead attorney for Pioneer International Hybrid. And that's a pretty good position. Anyway, we were having dinner, and he says, "Steve, what are you doing to measure adaptability traits in beef cattle?" I thought, bingo, that's pretty good. He says, "You know, Steve," he says, "adaptability is our whole structure. Everything's based on adaptability in seed corn." And then later on in that same year, I had the opportunity to meet the lead geneticist for Pioneer International, a guy named Bill Niebuhr, at a Scotch tasting party. That's just where we met. And so one thing led to another, and he made the comment that, you know, the increases in corn yield, and it's a great story, and it's a lot of success, but the advancements in corn yields through the years are almost solely due to increased plant population. We don't make bigger kernels and bigger ears. We plant more seed corn. Okay? And that seed corn has to stand the stress of more and more plant population. Okay? And one of the advantages of hybrid seed corn, I hope all of you can relate this to cows someday, the hybrid seed corn is that they're genetically equal. So one doesn't crowd another one out for nutrients and sunlight. So you can crowd them closer together, you plant more seed corn, and your yields go up. So it's an interesting concept. This is through Pioneer International, Dr. Bill Niebuhr, who has 500 geneticists that work under him. If you want to talk about genetics and making genetic improvement and what's going on, it's a fascinating area. So with no more time, I think our cow-calf producers have a lot of advisors. They get advice from veterinarians, seed stock suppliers, sale bond operators. So there's a wide variance of what they want for their priorities. They also prioritize things with the season of the year. Calving's very important in calving season. Fertility's very important during preg checking. All these have different priorities, and they go up and down. So it's something that you have a target that's always moving as a seed stock producer, and you can visit with 10 different customers, and you're going to get 10 different requests. So thank God we have a bell curve and variation in genetics, because we have that in demand. We have that in demand for our genetics. I think one of the big injustices of the feedstock industry is evaluating and supplying overmanaged, overfed, fossil fuel-dependent bulls to cow-calf producers forced to survive on solar energy and low-cost production. I think we as feedstock, and I'm not saying we in this room, but I'm saying as you go out in the industry, we are overfed, overmanaged, and overpampered relative to the commercial needs. And I think it's high time that we eliminate foot trimming, clipping cattle in the southeast so they'll rebreed and can stand hot weather and all the other things that go on with show fans and whatever else. And we expect these cattle to go out in the real world and survive under solar energy and less than perfect management because it cannot be afforded. I could talk all morning on ethanol and what's happening in Iowa and what's happening and what will happen. In fact, I think if we were going to meet here for 2 days and we talk nothing more than where we're going to go as an industry and what is going to become of feed supplies and fossil fuel and all these things, we couldn't accomplish a better agenda because it's very, very serious. And I think Ronnie Green touched on it and some other people did this morning, but energy costs are with us and going to be with us in my lifetime, and I'm sure even a lot of you that are younger than myself. The future of beef production will be determined by the ruminant's ability to adapt to limited solar-produced forages and agricultural co-products. We are, again, as I said in 1983, the garbage collectors of agriculture, and if we put ourselves on any higher pedestal than that, we're wrong. We clean up aftermath and garbage and cellulose, and we turn it into a nutritious, high-protein product. And if we lose the sight that a ruminant is a ruminant, and that's our whole card right there. She's a ruminant. And if we make best use of her as that in research and development and everything we do, I think she has an excellent, excellent place in agriculture and animal protein supplier. Thank you.